podcast.com. Well, now school's been out for summer. Welcome back to the Charming Podcast, everybody. It's Ken Allen bringing you the end of the semester edition. Hey, how's everybody doing out there in the podcast world? It's a good to talk to you again. I just finished up the semester with EMT classes. Congratulations, everybody who passed the EMT course for 2016 spring semester. Thanks for being there, and thanks for trying your all and getting through it, and doing your all. You know, do or do not, there is no try. Yoda, 1983. And he said it all right there. All of you put it out there, you did your best, and you passed. Some of you flying colors, some of you by the skinny old teeth. Nevertheless, you got through it, and you busted your humps to do so, and I applaud you for that. And I really enjoyed being with you all in this semester. Thanks for doing everything that you did, and I hope I gave you as much information as I could impart upon you. There is, at the end of this is going to be the little end of the year speech I gave that was just impromptu, kind of, you know, by the skin of my tooth to get it out there to you. It was only about, I don't know, maybe two or three minutes of it, but I love just going off the cuff, and that's what I'm doing now. But I've been thinking about it, and there's a whole portion of emergency care that really I feel bears talking about now that doesn't necessarily get touched upon ever in emergency medicine. That is absolutely the whole crux of emergency medicine once you actually get into the job. What we teach people is, what are you going to do when there's a life-threatening illness or emergency or trauma, injury to a patient? What are the things that you need to be looking at? Learn your protocols. Learn your ABCs, your airway, breathing, circulation. Airway, breathing, circulation. ABC. Always breathing, circulation. They don't walk on the lot lest they want to live, gentlemen. Put that coffee down. Okay. Coffee's for real EMTs. You, my friend, you don't want to put up with shit. You are shit. Hit the bricks, pal. All right. Sorry, done. Enough of Alec Baldwin. If you haven't seen Glengarry Glen Ross, check it out. Because you know what it takes to make a fire hydrant? It takes brass bullion to make a fire hydrant. Okay. All right. So what I was trying to say is we teach these people the protocols, the recognizing life-threatening illness and emergence and injury and how to handle that. And hopefully we impart enough on you that you can go out there, see it, and know your protocols enough to stabilize, package, and rapidly transport them to the hospital. That's the key to our job. That is the first key. That is the first step. You know it. You learn the emergencies. You treat the emergencies as best you can. You keep them stabilized to the ER. That's great. That's a great first step. Everybody learns that. Everybody who becomes an amazing firefighter, paramedic, EMT, nurse, doctor, whatever, has to learn that first. That is almost the smallest part of emergency medicine. Sometimes, you know, that's what you would all think. Oh my God, you go out there, you start the line, you get the tube, bam, you push the right drugs, you saw it, you recognized stroke, you learned to do the stroke protocol, you got it all down, you were so fast, expedient, and thorough, you might have saved their lives. Sometimes you actually do. And that's a high. That is a high. And that's a very real high for us. That's for me, I mean, you are on a cloud nine. And I know some soldiers will say, you know, it's the same thing being in a firefight. Not for us. For me, it's that adrenaline pump and doing the right thing, stabilizing and saving a life at the end of it is literally one of those things you walk away and like the sweat coming off you. Is like being baptized, and it's awesome. When a crew works together, it's awesome. It feels so good, dude. And so that is a huge portion of it. But that's usually, and maybe fortunately, that's not the huge job. That's not what our job really entails. Our job entails patient care, on a whole other level of care, caring for the patient. And this is something that I don't know you can teach. I know you can demonstrate it, and some people will catch it, and some people just may not be able to do it. But for those of you who can recognize this and do this and have the courage and have the wherewithal to do it, this is what brings you from being a really good medic, real good EMT, to a great EMT medic. This is the thing that I've learned is, after you've learned all of these steps, you should know them in your heart and your soul unconsciously. Be able to do airway breathing, putting on a blood pressure cuff, getting the right blood pressure, getting the right pulse, getting the right respiration. Knowing what that means for the patient, getting a good history on them, listening to their medication, learning their path, blah, 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 learning all that stuff, putting together a good picture. That's the first step. And then we treat the illness, or then we treat the injury, and then we do that. But then everything else after that is, what's your relationship with the patient? What is the relationship that you're going to create with this patient? Yeah, you know all this information. Are you able to tell the patient about what's happening to them in a professional manner, in a way that you can explain it in layman's terms to get them to understand it, for them to understand what you're about to do to treat their illness, and to make them feel comfortable as you do that? To say to somebody, okay, so you know what we're seeing here? Not saying, we're seeing obvious signs of heart attack. It appears that you're going into another myocardial infarction. And what we're going to do now is start two IVs. We're going to give you possible lidocaine. And we're going to set you up with aspirin nitro, get you on a monitor, 12 lead, high flow oxygen, and get you to the hospital as fast, and set them up with the STEMI protocol when you get to the hospital. What the hell does that mean to anybody who's having a heart attack? Have you ever had anything stressful happen in your life? Can you take in anything like that? I don't think I could, but what does help is going, okay, how are you feeling right now? You look like you're doing pretty good. Are you feeling okay? I know it's hurting you. Okay, so what I can do here, let me tell you what's going on. I'm looking at my machine here. Looks like there's some cardiac stuff going on. Your heart's doing some stuff, all right? It's doing some funky things. So there might be a heart attack going on here. Just want to let you know that. So what I'm going to do is this. We're going to give you some morphine. I've already given you aspirin and nitro, and let's just calm it down. We'll see what goes on. I've already called the hospital. They know you're coming. How you doing with that? You good? All right, cool. Just talk. All right, how's everything else? Okay, everything else good? How's your day going? But any questions you have, I can tell you what's going on. So what's possibly happening here is, might be a little clot that set itself somewhere in your heart. Now, due to your blood pressure and your pulse here, you're doing okay, but I'm watching it. We're watching this, and this is what we're gonna be watching as we get you into the hospital. Here's what's gonna happen when they get to the hospital. I'm gonna give them a rundown. They're gonna do a little preliminary thing and probably get you up to a cath lab. And that whole thing consists of you getting up to the cath lab. They're gonna do some dyes into you, and they're gonna put you into the cath lab. They're gonna see what's going on and when we need to operate, if that's the case or not. And we're going to go from there, all right? Sound good so far? Okay, how you doing with that? Okay, good. All right. And proceed from there. Talking to a patient does not have to be doctoral. You don't have to walk up and say things like, okay, now, ma'am, what I'd like you to do right now is, okay, hun, dear, could you please step up? And that stuff just seems so impersonal to me that I don't think it does anything but make a patient feel distant from themselves and the people that are trying to save their lives. Now, how do you train people to do that? Wow, I don't know. I don't necessarily know how until you forget all of the things that you've learned as skills and they become part of your subconscious, your unconscious treatment, so that then you can finally be present in the moment to treat a patient. Then, and only then, can you actually speak to them in a way that will be comforting and relevant to them. And I'm going to tell you just two stories that I have where it flipped my whole world kind of on its edge just for me to hear a medic do that. Really, and just to hear these two examples, okay? Just to make me go, oh, it's that. It is that. And then to be introduced to that world and then hear medics that do it all over the world and you go, that person gets it. In the immortal words of the retired fire captain at San Jose, Mark English, he gets it. He gets it. He would say that there. Well, see, he gets it. When I first started in Oakland as a medic, did a 10 call there. You have to do what's called a 10 call. And a 10 call means you're doing 10 advanced life support treatments for 10 different patients. You're doing 10 calls where you actually do some really good. You give some drugs. You get an ET tube. You know, you run a good code. You run a good, when somebody's not breathing, they have no heartbeat. You're doing CPR and you're giving drugs and you're defibrillating with the defibrillator and all that stuff. And you got to run at least 10 of them. And then after that, the medic that you're riding along with, it's kind of this little internship. And the medic goes, yeah, you know what you're doing. Yeah, we're good. We'll sign you off legally to work here. And that's, you know, that's how you get hired somewhere. Somebody basically just has to go, uh-huh. They wave the wand and you're in. Did great. Good times. I had already kind of worked as a medic doing some volunteer stuff. And so I was decent at it. And again, it's something I kind of grew up with. So I don't know. I kind of walked into it with a lot more confidence or probably arrogance than I should have. But I did fine. You know, I just nailed it. And we went on a call with this old guy, must have been 86, 87. Had an inguinal hernia, which is, for those of you who don't know, a hernia that's down, basically, it was in his scrotum. He had intestine basically popping into his scrotum. It was the size of a softball. And this poor guy, you walk in, he's gritting his teeth to the point that you can hear, can you hear that? Teeth are gritting against each other when he would breathe or move his leg. Okay, cold sweats on the guy. Hands are balled up in white fists. You know, but he's looking at us, gentlemen, how are you? You know, just gritting and bearing. I mean, you know, basically biting on the leather strap. And I said, well, I think it's that damn hernia again. But it popped through this time. I was outside. I was trying to pick up the grout. I was going to re-grout the bathroom. But I picked up the grout bag, and this happened. Okay, all right. Let me take a look. And look, and it's like fucking blue. And a little painful. I went through asking him about it. How's it feel? Oh, it hurts a little bit. Yeah, all right. Well, what on a scale of 1 to 10, how bad is it? And he goes, maybe a little drop of sweat rolls down his face. He goes, like a 4? Like a 4? Yeah, like a 4 even. Oh, okay. And he goes, well, I got to tell you, I was in the Philippines in World War II, and I get hit by shrapnel back then. That was probably, that was like an 8. I go, okay, so that was an 8 when he got hit by molten shrapnel. You know, so, and mind you, you'll get people that'll be like, 10 out of 10 pain, my stomach hurts because I'm feeling sick and I've thrown up 4 times. So, but this guy's saying 4 out of 10. Okay. I said, how about I give you a little morphine? Well, I don't know if I need it. You can probably keep that if you want to. So, well, here's the thing, sir. I'm going to have to either pick you up or have you stand up. And I don't want to be jostling you with this kind of pain, you know. I don't know, I just don't want you hurt like this. And he goes, well, yeah, you got to do what you got to do, you know. And I went, okay, well, yeah, I'm going to do a line and give you some morphine. I don't mean I'm going to do a line of cocaine. I mean, I'm going to give him IV, you know. So I hook him up, give him a line, give him like, you know, 2 milligrams. And then I got to tell you, one of the best things you can see is the glaze over of eyes when the morphine hits the system. And they just distance themselves from the pain. So when you're really in pain, morphine doesn't get you high. It just kind of pushes that pain to a different place. And you can see them kind of look away in relief, and he just went, yeah, that's better. That's better. Okay. Kind of shook his head. I went, all right, you good? I'm going to get you up now. And he goes, yeah, no, I can stand. I can stand up. I go, you sure? And he goes, yeah. We put him in the ambulance. And I've been riding with this guy. He's an older medic. You know, really, as we call salty. You know, just kind of, he'd been doing it for about 8 years. And he said, he's just kind of, hey, fuck it. There's a bunch of bullshit calls. We're going to be running, whatever. We go on this. And he's like, okay, yeah, hernia. I'm going to get there. And he's like, all right, yeah, good, give you the morphine. Yeah, it's cool. And we get into the ambulance, and this guy, the patient says, hey, I just got to say, hey, I really thank you and respect you for the job that you do here. And the guy that I'm working with stands up and goes, sir, I got to stop you right there. I just got to thank you for saving the world for us so that we can work here and be paramedics in the United States. I'd like to shake your hand if that's all right. Oh, hey man, we're just kids back then. And my partner goes, no, I just gotta have the utmost respect for you, sir. Thank you for what you did. Yeah. So what branch? I was in the Navy, you know, we were stationed in the Philippines. I was on the destroyer, and he goes, hey, you know, I had a friend whose dad was on a swift boat in Vietnam. Oh, yeah. And I was like, yeah, we were on this, and he starts talking about being in the Philippines in World War II and being across the South Pacific and the stories, and this guy starts to light up, and he's telling us about his kids and how he met his wife when he came home, and he moved to Alameda because, you know, that's where the Navy had some shipyards and this and that. And it was all of a sudden this guy turned on, and the pain was the last thing on his mind. And we're just sitting there, and I'm giggling. I'm fucking giddy listening to this guy talk about his life and everything that's happened to him for 15 minutes. He's told me everything he can talk and think about, because we're interested, because I'm legitimately interested. I'm going, hey, you know, my grandfather was there too. He was flying B-24s. And he goes, yeah, I mean, you can see those fucking Air Corps guys. Anyway, so I'm fucking, you know, and I'm like, oh, all right. Okay, but I still want to hear the story. Okay, so go on. And he tells the story. And we get to the hospital, and the guy that's doing my 10 call, goes, well, anyway, sir, thanks again. Just want to shake. Hey, sure, guys. Thank you. And we wheel him in, and that was it. And that was all I ever learned about him. But I learned his story in 15 minutes. He told me his life. And I was enraptured with his story. And we brought him. He goes, hey, we're going to go take a look. We'll wheel you in, and we bring him out, and I'm cleaning the ambulance, the gurney. And the medic walks out, and I go, I just got to tell you, man, that was amazing. I didn't even think you could talk to these people like real people. Hello. He goes, oh yeah, man, you gotta talk to these people. They got the best stories in the world. All they did was like save the world. Like these guys, like literally, there's only been like one war where we could literally go, it's good guys against bad guys, and the good guys won. Like that was that generation, and like they're dying, dude. Like we got it. Like anytime you can listen to them, like talk to them. And that was like, how did I not catch that? How did I not catch that from thinking about what it would become as an emergency caregiver, being that close to my grandfather growing up, being with my father who had all these stories, and then realizing, oh, this all ties in together. This is like exactly what this job is. It's talking to people and getting them away from their pain, their immediate issues, once we've dealt with that. And making their time now a little more comfortable, and also more confident that things are right, things are good now as we go in for the next treatment, the next line of treatment. And maybe they're not going to be able to talk to the nurses there, because the nurses are super bombarded by patients, and the doctors got a lot of patients. Maybe they will talk to a doctor that might do that, or a nurse, and those are kick-ass nurses and doctors. But we as caregivers got that opportunity. Don't miss out on that. Second thing that happened to me, almost in the first 2 months, I was working with another older medic. And he said, hey, we got to get by. Hey, we just started the shift. He goes, hey, you mind we get by the old, we got to get by Home Depot today. The one over, like, across from the Coliseum in Oakland. Hagenberger, which one is it? Like, 92nd or Hagenberger? I can't remember where it is. And he goes, yeah, we, anyway, the thing is, over, you know, at Home Depot's, they allowed the mobile homes to park there if they're, like, on a trip. He said, we got a call there yesterday, and husband didn't make it. He died. We were doing CPR the whole time, and, like, the wife's still there. Mind if we go by there anytime? I go, oh, yeah, of course, of course. All right, cool, thanks, man, that'd be good. But, like, you could just see this guy was just older and grizzly and should have, could have been burnt out, was not, was, but knew when not to be. So we catch lunch at about 2, and we drive over there, and he goes, I think there's food over there. I'm like, hell yeah, there's a Wingstop here, bro, and there's an In-N-Out. And he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, let's grab some. So we go by there, and he gets a hamburger from, he gets two hamburgers and, you know, he gets two double doubles and fries. And I get the same, I get one of each. And we drive over to the Home Depot parking lot and he knocks on the door of the mobile home and the wife answers and he goes, hey, and she goes, and she sees him and recognizes him. And then the smile comes over her face. And then just breaks. And then just breaks. And she just starts crying and reaches over and hugs him and just starts bawling. And he doesn't look, he just leans into it. And he's hugging and holding her and he just waits, doesn't say a thing. And he's just rubbing and he's good. And we, like a good minute and 20, minute and a half. And she just goes, he goes, how, here, I got you some food. How you doing? I just talked to the kids and they know now that he's gone. And now we got one of them coming out from Kansas City and he's going to come over. Come on in, come on inside. Sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Come in, the place is a mess. And we went in and sat down during our lunchtime with her, our lunchtime with her, her lunchtime. And just talked. Sat there. Didn't eat. I mean, maybe had a bite, you know, maybe shared some fry. That's it. Share a fry. And, but shared that. And he said, what can we do for you? What can I, no, there's nothing to do there. He goes, nah, what can I do? She goes, you did the best. There's nothing I can do. And he goes, all right. Listen, I worry about it. I want to make sure you're okay though. He was a tough guy. He really was tough. And she starts talking. And she talked for a good 10, 15. And it was kind of that, you're just feeling awkward the whole time, you know. But you're hearing these bits of something where you just, you're going, I don't know. And all of a sudden she'll say something. And you go, oh, he sounds awesome. Like, oh, he sounds like a really good man. But you don't know how to interject that. But like just little bits and pieces of stuff she was remembering along the way just kind of flashes in your head. You know, he used to coach all the Little League. He coached all, he used to work. He was working at the factory. I think he worked at a lumber yard actually. But he used to always find time to be the coach for the Little League team. And they never forgot that. That's what he said to me on the phone yesterday when I talked to him. And you hear that stuff and he just breaks your heart a little bit, breaks your heart a little bit every time. But it meant leaving there, and you have to leave eventually, and then it feels weird to leave. But leaving there, you walk out of there going, I mean, what other job would you do? What other job would you do after that? Okay. Yeah, everybody, I'm just going to say thanks for a great semester. Remember the first day we were in here and everybody was like this, sitting in the front, and nobody was talking to each other, and I had all your undivided attention. And now I got it again, but this is the last time I've had it. This is the first time I've had it since the first day. So thanks for growing as a class. Thanks for working in groups, learning to be team members, team leaders. When you get out in the field, you're going to be overwhelmed. You're going to be scared. Well, not scared. You're going to be anxious. You're going to be nervous about the things you're going to see. That's all natural. Hopefully in this class, we've kind of got you past the first stage fright of that. And you know you can breathe through it. And you know you can accomplish what you need to accomplish. If you don't know the answer, ask your friends. Ask your teammates. Phone the medical director. You have all of the supplies, all of the additional resources you're going to need to succeed in this field. And you'll have that knowledge that if this is something that seems insurmountable, just start with airway, breathing, circulation. First, calm yourself down. Deal with your own airway and breathing. Deal with your own pulse. And then proceed into the call. Really, this, and there's something to be said about being confident versus being proud, in the Greek sense. Confidence is going to be good for you. You need to feel poised and to feel like you know what to do in these situations. Confidence saves lives. Make sure you're confident for the right reasons. Make sure that you know your skills. Make sure that you come back and remediate. Try your skills out. When there is something that you don't know about, you go to a CE presentation about positive air pressure or some new device that's out there. Stand up and walk over to the thing and start playing with it, okay? Because you don't know it. And what you don't know kills people. So figure out things sooner than later. Work with your hands, work with your mind, and work with your partners out in the field. That's what's going to save lives. Remember that. If you don't have something to fall back on, you're not going to be able to do a very good job. But you have people out there that are your teammates and your crews. Look at them as allies. Don't go out there telling them the name of the game and you're going to be combative with them. Remember, there's been already some team struggles in here between people, but you sorted it out. And you sorted it out not by being egotistical. You sorted it out by being willing to compromise and work out who has the best idea for patient care. Be careful when you're out there to be thinking about what is the best patient care, not what do I want to do, but what is being offered up to me in order to do the best patient care. The best captain, as you're sure John knows, is somebody who listens to his crew and goes with the right answer. Ego is not involved in it at all. The more experience you get out there, the less it's about ego, the more it's about confidence and teamwork. So I just want to thank everybody again for sticking with it and getting through it. And I hope I gave you as much as I could, and I hope you gained as much as you could from me. Remember, don't be a stranger. Come back and work on all this stuff when you're doing your upcoming interviews for different departments and different ambulance services and hospitals. It is a trial and error process. Start interviewing now. Be ready to fail. Failure is necessary. Giving up is your killer. That's the ultimate fail. Okay, so get out there and fail. Get out there and do crazy interviews. Have terrible times. Sweat it out. Think about what you did right and hone those skills, because interviewing is a skill in and of itself. Get good at that. Sometimes at these interviews, they will have you do patient care assessments and scenarios and work with equipment. Come in here and practice this stuff before you go out on it, okay? It is a learning procedure, and it really is not so, it's really how often are you doing the job that keeps your skills honed and sharpened. So stay busy. Work on this stuff. If you're not in the field doing this, then be reading and researching it or getting into other classes. And when you get out in the field, get into a busy system. That's how you learn the fastest, okay? Trial by fire is absolutely the best way, in my opinion, to do it. And you'll find out that the most cool, calm, collected, outgoing people are the ones that work in those busy systems. They're the ones that are gonna go, hey, that sucked, but that's fine. All right, we're gonna have another one coming up. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Shake it off. We got another one coming. That's totally what you're gonna need when you get out there. So get someplace busy and just start working. Just start working. It's a work in progress. Okay? So if you need anything from us, you know where to come. Letters of recommendations, etc. Team leaders, you know that I got your back on that. Thanks again for doing it. Couldn't have gotten through this class without you. And then you're working with your teammates. Make sure you thank them, too, for a great semester. All right? So we got some awards to do, and we got some, sure, yeah, yeah.
The other half of it.
Mm-hmm. We'll just waft that pizza up to the gods. This is how you feed like the gods, right? You just let them breathe the intoxicating aroma. Hey guys, any questions about anything? Like I was saying, Mother Jugs and Speed, a little dated. I will do a podcast about it. I wanted to do it so that I'm listening to it, like watching it, and you can follow along at home. That'd be fun. Yeah, do a play-by-play radio podcast. What do you want to do? You have it on Amazon? You want to play it now? Yeah. Can't really. Oh, you know, not right now because we're going to do the graduation ceremony thing. Yeah. Yeah, there is that rape, possible rape scene in that. That's a little questionable. It's JR from Dallas.
Sounds like good old-fashioned.
But it's old-fashioned stuff, and they are, you know, they show guys carrying handguns, which was very real when my dad got in. Oh, one further thing I wanted to say. We were talking about emergency, right? Well, my father, Rich, was when they did a pilot for emergency in San Francisco. Didn't get picked up, but they did it, and they ran with Rich and his engine company, Rescue One. Rescue One. I'm sure you could find it. It'd probably be Emergency San Francisco as a pilot.
Emergency pilot?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, when Emergency was in San Francisco two times.
Yeah.
Will you read the names?
Okay.
Still find space so we can call home.